Yeah, I mean, we have a quorum.
Whatever you would like to do. If you're ready, we just got to let Bill know before we get started.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get started. Are we all good to go?
Good to go. I just started recording.
Perfect. Thank you. So I am going to call this June 16, 2020 meeting to order at 6:31 p.m. And would everybody join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? Pledge allegiance to the flag.
The United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Note in attendance is Commissioner Fatizzi, Commissioner Maddox, Commissioner Freiberger, and Commissioner. And given the oddity of everything, I'll let John move us into discussion about protocols for virtual meetings.
All right.
Change since we're in phase two now?
Yes. Well, it was less of a phase two change, but it was a change in the governor's proclamation after it expired on May 31st, and he created a new proclamation continuing the closures and referring to all the phases opening, and changed the name from Stay Home, Stay Safe to Safe Start. So as part of that, the governor removed the requirement that you can't have public meetings via Zoom or virtual meeting. So our legal department, Nikki, the city attorney, said that it is now okay for us to talk about issues that are not COVID related, and even okay to have public hearings by a virtual meeting. So that's we're gonna start lightly this time. We're also using a new format. Last time we used GoToMeeting. This time we're using Zoom webinar, as you noticed. So didn't want to have too heavy of a schedule as we're still trying to get over this learning curve. And frankly, we didn't have a whole lot of time to respond after the governor changed the order. We didn't find out about it until like May or June 1st. So that didn't give us a lot of time to schedule any public hearings anyway. So all we have on the agenda today is continuation of an item that we talked about, I think last in February. So we're free to discuss things however we see fit. We've made it possible for people to attend, and the governor's cleared us for discussing all items besides COVID. So I wanted to leave it to the Planning Commission now if you have any questions to let them rip.
Before anybody chimes in, I just want to make note that Commissioner Huggins and Commissioner Frenette have joined in and are present.
I think I saw Commissioner Penno also.
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, sorry about that. You're not on my screen. All right, so any comments or questions regarding the virtual format moving forward? All right.
All right. We'll try to use the same protocols one person at a time. We've got more people on video, but I can only see two people, three people at a time. So I don't know, can't necessarily see if everybody's making a motion to speak or anything. So just be patient, and it puts a little extra work on the chair to make sure that everybody is being heard if they're trying to be heard.
Hey, John, this is Bill Chambers. Just a quick technical note. You can click on the little icon to the left of your screen that says switch to active speaker, and that will show just the person who's speaking. If you have a lot of participants, sometimes that's easier to do.
Yeah. Just as a note to the body, I mean, I keep mine in gallery mode, and I only see 8 people. So I apologize, Stephanie, or Stacy, if I kind of single you out and ask.
That's all right.
Just because I can't see you, I just want to make sure. But otherwise, yes, kind of one speaker at a time. And I'll do my best to make sure that if everybody wants to make a comment or has a question, that they will be addressed. Any further discussion?
Eric, I was going to say there's also the chat feature. So if you have the chat feature open on the side, if they have a question and they're not on screen, they can type it into the chat and you would see that they are saying, hey, I need to say something. Or
now, I do have a question about that, Bill. I know that we had chat open for my school board meetings, but then we disabled it because supposedly it's not part of the public record. Are we enabling chat or not? Do you know?
I didn't disable it on here. I'm not sure if I can disable it once the webinar has begun. Let me take a look here.
Well, let me point out that is something that we've talked about, I think, with Nikki. And the chat feature isn't so much a problem as much as chatting between the planning commissioners, where other people can't see how they're communicating. So please don't use the chat feature if we can't disable it.
And it could be, Eric, that the chat feature is actually captured in the recording for Zoom webinar as opposed to Zoom meetings.
Okay.
I'll look into that and let you know.
Okay.
I was only suggesting it as a way to raise your hand if you're not on screen, that you could type into the chat that have a question or whatever. But
sure.
We have a raise hand function on this Zoom webinar.
I see one in the more, there's a raise hand.
Correct. Yeah, I just.
So that's always an option too.
Okay. All right. Any other suggestions or comments? All right, moving along, has everybody had an opportunity to review the minutes from May 19? And if there was no edits or corrections, I would entertain a motion to approve.
I make a motion to approve.
I second.
All right. Commissioner Frenette, you need to unmute yourself. Can you?
He's talking.
Yeah, he's talking. All right, so.
Wait, right here. How about now?
Okay, good. Now you're good.
Okay, I didn't know there was a bunch of buttons up there.
That's all right.
So, yeah, if they could spell my name correctly, that would be great. That's the only change. Oh. I think.
Far enough.
All right, so Commissioner Fattisi, would you amend your motion as for it to be as edited or as corrected?
I would like to amend the name call of Commissioner Frenette, spelled Farnett versus the mistake of Farnett. And I make a motion to accept after the change.
All right. So it's been moved.
And I'll second that.
Okay. All right. So it's been moved by Commissioner Fattisi to approve the minutes as amended and seconded by Commissioner Freiberger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? All right, minutes are accepted. So moving along to general public comment. So I saw in the agenda where any submitted by email or mail would be read into the record. Did we receive any sort of comments for tonight's meeting?
I have not received any. I don't know if Catherine has.
Okay. Just shaking her head no.
I have not.
Perfect. So no public comments, no public hearing. So we'll move right along into the unfinished business, the amendments to the Cedarville Municipal Code to address parking requirements for new buildings in the downtown core of the Central Business District. This is a continuation from the February 18, 2020 review. And John, do you have a intro into this subject or should we just dive sure. right in?
Yeah, all right. I'll do an intro. So the Planning Commission's already looked at this item twice. First time, just kind of get familiar with the problem. And then the second time we talked about it in a little bit more detail. But at that point, staff hadn't actually proposed any changes because we didn't know where the Planning Commission wanted to go with it. So wanted to get the Planning Commission's feedback before we proposed any changes. At the February meeting, there was a good amount of discussion that gave staff enough direction to create some proposed changes. We based parking on, I'll get into the details in a moment. So we actually have something to look at now for you to edit and give feedback on. And depending on what the Planning Commission decides on this draft, the next meeting, we'll probably have a public hearing on the proposed changes. Now, I apologize if what I created here isn't exactly what the Planning Commission had asked for. It had been since February, since I last visited this topic at the meeting. So I had pretty good notes, fortunately. So I think I went in the right direction, but if not, I'm happy to make alterations to make this a better document. The issue is, there's actually two issues in here that we're trying to address. One is section 1724.050B1, which says that there's no off-street parking requirement for residential dwellings in association with a commercial or retail use in the Central Business District. That was the line right there that Council was a little bit concerned about, and that's why they sent it to the Planning Commission. They wanted to have the Planning Commission look at it and come up with some ideas. They were a little uneasy with having no parking requirements for residential uses. So that's the first issue. And then that section, then there's another section in the parking chapter. So that section that I read you was out of the Central Business District parking requirements. In the off-street parking chapter, there's also a requirement, or not a requirement, but there's a caveat that says new retail businesses and restaurants located in the area downtown may use city-owned parking lots to accommodate the parking requirements in this chapter in chapter 1724, which is the Central Business District. And so that section was intended to allow companies that were opening new restaurants and retail in the Central Business District to not have to find parking if, you know, say it was a office before and someone wanted to put a restaurant in there. That would require, with a change of use, the addition of many parking spaces, depending on how large it could be, dozens of parking spaces. And there's no on-site parking available in the downtown area because those buildings cover the entire lot. So it created sort of a tough situation for people that wanted to move a business into downtown. We're saying, well, you got to come up with certain number of parking spaces, and there just aren't parking spaces available for them to do so. So it was a way of allowing those businesses to come in without having to worry about parking. But we may want to consider if somebody builds a new building downtown and they want to put commercial or retail in there, do we want those new buildings to have some sort of off-street parking? Or do we continue to say, if you're going to put a retail or a restaurant in there, you don't have to build any parking? So I've addressed these in two separate places. One is if you look at attachment one, starts on page 4, that addresses the parking for residential uses in the Central Business District chapter itself. And then if you go to page 5, I addressed the commercial parking consideration in the off-street parking chapter. It still would allow existing building, that change would still allow businesses going into existing buildings to not have to worry about parking, but it did add a new requirement that any new buildings that contain commercial space shall provide commercial parking per the commercial parking requirements in this chapter. So in previous part of the chapter, it says if you do a retail store, you have to provide, you know, one parking per 400 square feet of area open to the public. If you do a restaurant, you need one parking spot per 75 square feet of area open to the public, and so on. And I don't have those details in this. We can reference back to that if you want to look at those actual requirements for how many parking spaces each type of use has. So I hope that makes sense. So in the first part of attachment one, we've got new off-street parking requirements for studios, one bedroom, two bedroom, three bedrooms, and overflow. And then in the second part of attachment two, we've got changes to the parking, off-street parking requirements to require commercial parking spaces or new buildings in the CBD. If you got any questions, let me know. I hope that was clear.
Hey. Commissioner Patizzi?
A couple things. Where exactly is the city lots? I know there's the one behind the Woolly Market, right? And is the other one right across from Mestizo on the vacated Northern Avenue?
No.
Okay, where's it at?
The other one is adjacent to the Mason's Hall.
Okay.
behind the Wells Fargo Bank.
Okay, I just have an aerial up. And also the second question is, where you have the lines going in through the middle of, how come it doesn't extend to the front of Warner Street? There's some open, a lot of open space there. So we have the line in attachment two, and this is minor, by the way, as well. On the top attachment two, it's 17.36.020B applies, not 1736. See how you have the blue line? How come it's not on, how come we don't expand it all the way over to Warner? Like the front of it. Looks like it cuts it off in the middle of the.
Yeah, that's an alleyway.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what, if the line was originally written as part of the parking or if it was part of the original CBD, but the point was that the buildings facing State Street were, from the alley facing State Street were commercial buildings, and the stuff from the alley facing Warner Street was all residential. And so we didn't want to include the residential area in the business part of it.
Oh, I see what you're saying, on the facing side. So yeah. On the, that would be the, what, the south side of Warner, right? So you didn't want to include that. But across the street, you got Lemley. But it looks like it only gets commercial when it gets further east.
Yeah, so I don't know. It was not arbitrary at the time, but and it may be a good thing to change now, you know, because I see what you're saying. There's places where you can put lots.
Yeah.
It wouldn't do it. But that was the original intent, was just to keep the residential separated from the commercial part as it existed.
So all the blue line does is say, if you're within that blue line, and you are building and you want to have a commercial use in an existing building, you don't need to worry about parking. That's what
in an existing building.
Yeah, that only applies to existing.
So technically, if you were somewhere along the edge there, you could potentially provide offset parking on outside of that. That's not limiting where you can provide the parking necessarily. Like there could be a lot next across the street then, correct? Potentially.
Yeah, this line just shows if you have an existing building and you're changing a use and you need to provide more parking than you've traditionally had in that for that building, you can use city lots. Any new building within there, with the changes that we've made, with the changes I've proposed, any new building within there would still have to provide parking.
Okay.
That's if the Planning Commission wants to require a commercial parking requirement for new buildings in the CBD.
Commissioner Maddox?
I'm a little bit concerned about requiring parking for new buildings. I mean, I think about the lot where the video store burned down, and if somebody ever wanted to build there, it would be extremely hard to provide any sort of meaningful parking in that particular lot. It's a small lot, and if somebody especially wanted to put a restaurant or something, to meet those parking requirements might be really difficult. I don't have any other examples off the top of my head, but I think that we should look at that, or maybe there's a way we can allow for a variance or a developer to apply for a variance. But I really don't think we want to do anything that restricts the ability to rebuild something like in that specific spot, but also allow any other kind of infill that might happen in the future and down, you know, in the downtown core. So I think we just want to be real careful about that.
Very good point. Commissioner Fattizi.
I think the intent was to cover parking, not for necessarily commercial, because if you look at it, you're right. There's plenty of parking on Metcalf and Woodworth, especially Woodworth. But anyway, let's say you go to the max height and all of a sudden you got 20 residential units on top of the commercial. right? That was the thing right there. It's not to prevent another business from being there. It's more the fact of if you put residential housing in, that's going to be where the overflow is going to happen. So well, that might be the answer, right? If it's only commercial, then you're good. However, depending what the mix, what the project proposal is, maybe that should predicate what parking is required. And John, you can opine on this anytime. I mean, can we have our cake and eat it too?
I'd like to point out that Commissioner Maddox's concern could also apply to residential. Say, you know, you take the old lot where the fire was, and if they want to do, they're allowed up to 60 feet, so they could probably get three stories easily, maybe squeeze in four stories of residential. So maybe that's, you know, we'll call it 10 units under our new parking, under the proposed residential parking requirements, that they would have to have, say there were 10 studios in there, they'd have to have 10 parking spaces, and 10 parking spaces would take up, they're about 20 foot deep and 9 feet across. So that would take up pretty much the entire bottom floor, the entire footprint of that parcel. So these are all things that you need to be aware of as you try to decide how to address parking for residential and commercial.
So John, let's use that same lot and then just across the street of Metcalf, south side of Woodworth. You know, I know in the upstairs there's like a dyslexia tutor up there, and there's like a licensed massage therapist or something. But what if the building owner decided to turn those commercial units into a residential unit? I mean, does that fall under the current guidelines, or would that then require, if we were to implement these changes, would that require them to try to figure out and find parking?
So the current code reads, there shall be no off-street parking requirement for residential dwellings in association with commercial or retail use in the central business district. So the way I would read that is they wouldn't have to provide parking because it's residential with commercial below.
Okay.
And there's an error. Oh my gosh. In attachment one, I forgot to, that first line right there in 1724.050, and then go down to B1, that first line, there shall be no off-street parking requirement for residential dwellings in association with a commercial or retail use in the central business district. That should be stricken through, as it shows earlier on page 2 of the memo.
You're right.
Yeah, I saw that. I figured that would be corrected. So.
I have a question, or I had a comment to make that. Remember that when this was done in probably about 2001 or 2003 or somewhere in there, at that time you couldn't make the buildings any taller than they were, and only one residential unit was allowed. So above the buildings as the code existed. So we didn't see a problem because you'd just be taking out a unit and putting another unit in, or putting one unit above stores that were already there but didn't have a unit, a residential unit above them. So it was a different time. So that's why it was written that way. So I think it's a good idea to look at adding some kind of parking requirement for residential at least.
Thank you, Pat. So, I mean, to kind of play off of what Commissioner Maddox had talked about, the difficulty of adding the new parking. I mean, in re-looking at our notes or the memo from the February meeting, we talked about how there would be other factors that would play into the need for having this designed into a developer's plan, for the instance of like financing. So I mean that there are certain elements, but you know, with a downtown that's already, you know, not overdeveloped, but pretty much fully developed, I mean, there isn't a whole lot of room in order to, unless you dig down, for finding that additional parking, off-street parking. I mean, would the two main options be underground parking or going into a vacant lot and trying to develop parking somewhere else? I mean, there's a vacant lot off of Ferry Street between two buildings on the south side of Ferry Street across from Magnolia. But I mean, there isn't a whole heck of a lot of options. Commissioner Huggins?
Yeah, I've been thinking about that too. And I think that they don't need to have it on the property if they can do it, not in lieu, but if they can find another place that they can do the parking other than their own site, as long as it's within walking distance. And I think John had something about like within 500 feet or something. And then the other thing is that I know Burlington Northern is hard to work with, but there's a good opportunity all the way along the railroad tracks, both north, south, and then the east and west one to landscape that and also put in parking. It would really, really spruce up the town quite a bit, and we'd get a ton of parking. Probably get 40 spaces along Eastern Avenue there, and I don't know how many you could get across the other east-west section there. I don't remember what that little street's called, but anyway, there are some places where you could work if you could get Burlington Northern to let us do a little landscaping and put in a few spaces right on the street.
So John, how likely would Burlington Northern actually do that? I know that railroads are notorious for clinging to their land that they've been granted and not really playing nice in the sandbox with municipalities for use of that land. I know that there was kind of a lot of finagling to just get the rail ties up along that section that Pat's talking about. But, you know, what is the likelihood that they'd actually let us or let even just like a developer use that land for purposes of obtaining parking requirements?
There, Burlington Northern's a large bureaucratic agency that's very tough to get in touch with. You're right in their reputation. Developers haven't had a lot of success in convincing them to approve leases or give land or anything like that. Cities sometimes have a hard time communicating with them and getting, and certainly Burlington Northern is not in the business of giving away their land, even for long-term lease purposes. But I'm not saying it can't be done. I would say it's unlikely. The other option would be, you know, along Eastern, there might be a little room in the right-of-way left for some on-street parking, but, you know, that would be city land that's being developed, and that would be something the city would have to do. We would not be able to say, you know, if a developer wanted to build a building and they wanted to use the parking in the right of way, you know, even if the developer paid to put the parking in, we wouldn't be able to say that is, you know, exclusively for their tenants. That's public right of way. So required to allow everybody to use it, so we can't say it's just for one specific development.
Yes, Commissioner Huggins.
Isn't the Burlington Northernland, it's zoned public, right, John? Is it is parking a public use? And if you could work out a lease agreement, a long-term lease agreement with them, I mean, it's a way Burlington Northern can make some money in a situation where they can't really use the land for anything, because we've zoned it public, so they can't. I'm just curious, is it a parking a possible use of public land?
Well, Burlington Northern, I mean, yes, I think it would be possible to put parking on it. I think it would be, you know, I think it's part of the plan for the, you know, the comprehensive plan for that to become more pathway and open space, recreational area rather than parking. And it's just, you just never, I can't speak for Burlington Northern, because they, even if something makes sense to the community, they may have one small thing that makes sense to them, and so they don't have to come to the game.
Yeah, thanks, John.
Commissioner Frenette?
Is there any examples of parking spaces in the CBD right now for any of the, like, parking attached to a particular building or business?
Yeah, downtown 48, what we did on Rita and State, right? That's pretty much an example, how we split the commercial portion in a separate building next to the downtown 48. We were talking about that, what, two meetings ago?
Yeah, but that would be falling within the CBD and not within this particular area that would fall within the blue.
So the blue area, I'd like to point out, is just for commercial parking. Anything in the CBD, the resident, I know it's confusing. The residential portion is anywhere in the CBD. The blue line is just for providing commercial parking, ostensibly for existing buildings, but we might change that.
Commissioner Freiberg.
Is there any potential for perhaps turning part of the property that is the old car, I think it was Ford over there, that's been vacated relatively recently into parking?
Danielle, I'm looking at the same thing. That solves your problem. If you look at that lot Street. On the south side of Ferry, and that vacated area along Eastern, that's a whole lot of parking. And Pat, you'd get more than 40 parking spaces along Eastern, even if you just look at that, the Duane Lane vacated. Yeah, there's your answer. Not ours.
I don't know that the problem is finding a spot where parking can go. I think it's the problem is who's gonna provide it. So we get, I mean, we're looking to provide parking for specific residential uses that might come, and specific commercial uses that might come. As much as the city would love to develop more downtown parking spaces, parking lots to accommodate new businesses and residents to come in, you know, that's millions of dollars that we don't have to develop parking. So it's kind of up to the developer.
And, you know, with that old dealership lot, or lots, I guess it would be, you know, that would be great if that got developed into, you know, some residential and commercial. But I mean, if someone built on the Metcalf Woodworth corner there, I mean, no one's going to walk from that old dealership all the way over to that unit. I mean, that's, I don't even know if in the in a more densely populated urban area, they would even walk that far just for their own personal residence.
It's only like 2 blocks, for God's sake. Come on, man, get off the couch.
Are you gonna walk two blocks each way every single day, 2-3 times a day?
I was a kid that walked a mile to the school in the snow.
Hey, both John, directions, right, Joe?
What about the option? Okay, so the city owns the property behind the Woolly Market. Let's say a real solid plan comes through, and we give them the option to go multi-level on that lot, in essence, to expand the city portion higher. Would that be something to consider? Because it's well within the guidelines of the height limitations, right? And between East State, Murdoch, and Metcalf, especially on East State, the streets are plenty wide. I mean, to just provide that option to a developer to say, hey, listen, yeah, this is what the other option is, and yeah, you're going to have to pay for it. So,
well, I'm not real clear on what you're proposing, but there is already in 1724050, the downtown parking, there is the ability to create a downtown parking district.
Mm-hmm.
How that works, the details have never really materialized. It would have to be some sort of public-private partnership where the developer gives in lieu money and the city mm-hmm. builds and constructs. Now, if somebody gives enough, if the details are worked out and somebody gave enough money for, you know, their required 18 parking spaces or whatever it is, mm-hmm. that's never going to be enough to actually get a parking district off the ground. The city would have to find other money in order to just get started on that 18. So you really, what I'm getting at is you need numerous contributors in order to get a parking district off the ground, especially if it's just a couple parking spaces here and there for small mm-hmm. buildings. And we'd love if that could work, but we just haven't seen a scale of development in the CBD that would enable that. And that already exists, so that ability.
Commissioner Huggins?
So I have a question, I guess probably mostly for, well, you guys all have backgrounds in construction. My understanding is there's no problem with building underground, even if there's a high water table. The question, is it just that it's nobody's going to do it because they can still find a piece of land somewhere else where they don't have to do it? Or, I mean, why are, you know, every place I go to, I go into Canada, I go to Seattle, you know, almost any city that's even just a little bit bigger than Cedar Woolley, they have underground parking under their buildings. That, or they have businesses on the ground floor, and then they have parking on the second floor, and then whatever above. So what is the mechanics that's keeping us from just saying that if you want to build, put the parking underneath?
Commissioner Maddox?
It's just really, really expensive, and for most projects, unless the developers have just like infinitely deep pockets, it would just make them financially unfeasible. You know, I mean, they're, if you're talking about hundreds of units and
yeah.
with an unlimited budget, maybe so, but for like, if we were talking about 10 units, you know, you could easily add $50,000 to $100,000 per unit, putting in an underground parking, and I mean straight to infinity. And so, cost is the issue. And if we're trying to encourage development and new businesses coming into downtown, parking is really expensive. You know, it's super expensive, and it's totally a make or break deal for a lot of development. And so that's just the deal, you know. If the land is really cheap and it's available, parking might not be such a big deal, but it does. Same reason John's talking about it. Providing 18 units of parking, you know, can easily break the numbers for any sort of small scale development. So that's the root of the issue for developers, I think.
Thanks, Thomas.
Thank you. Commissioner Fatizzi, are you still wanting to make a comment?
Yeah, just to add on to that, it's even an infrastructure thing because you still have to handle surface water management. Just because you go underground two stories, water is still going to flow onto those surfaces. They're impervious. So is there even capacity in the streets to even handle that? And then you got to pump uphill. So yeah, it's multi-level as far as money goes. It's expensive to go underground. That's all.
Yeah, and having looked into buying that building behind on the corner of Murdoch and Woodworth, I mean, I think we found out that the water table was like only like 15 feet or something like that, give or take a couple of feet. So it's not very far down at all. So
that's pretty typical in the downtown area. Maybe a little lower, but I don't know how deep you need to go for a parking garage, but if you run into water table, it's going to make it more expensive.
Right. And yeah, I was getting to say, you know, it doesn't make it impossible, but it definitely probably makes it much, much more cost prohibitive on something that's already kind of cost prohibited in and of itself. Anybody else have some thoughts or input? Commissioner Frenette?
On the flip side of that question that you asked those of us who are into construction, how much a parking garage would cost. The other end of that is if you were going to develop in the downtown district, would you ignore parking or would you, I mean, as a builder, you want people to come and go freely and have a place to park. Wouldn't it be natural for you to plan that one way or another, or would you just ignore it? And I mean, you're spending all that money, you would want to make it right? So I guess what I'm trying to say is, do we have to have any requirements? Because wouldn't they put it on themselves to require something for people to park, some place for people to park?
I mean, are there too many lenders out there that don't require some sort of parking element within a project that they're going to fund? I mean, I know that most do. I just don't know if a developer could find a lender somewhere that would allow them to just say, "Yeah, we got all this, you know, free street parking. We're just going to run with that." And I don't know the answer to that, but it is a good point. Commissioner Maddox?
Well, I think that Paul Woodmansey sort of directly addressed that at one of our, as a comment at one of our meetings some months back, just that for most of these projects to be considered viable, the developers, at least for the residential aspect, the developers have to provide some kind of parking. And I don't know, I'm kind of the mind that we're sort of hand-wringing over a non-issue, you know. I don't know. Yes, if a developer built a 200-unit or even a 50-unit apartment building in that downtown core and didn't provide any parking, it might create an issue. But I think they would have a just as big of an issue renting out the units or selling the units or whatever they were planning on doing with them. if there was no parking on site. And so I think allowing a lot of flexibility for developers is one way that we're going to, you know, with good design standards, but encourage some development to actually happen around here, because, you know, there we have lots like where the video store burned down that it's going to be a jump for anybody to be able to develop there. And the more things like parking requirements, that pool is going to get even smaller. So I personally, I'm of the view that it's maybe a non-issue, but that's just my two cents.
Thank you.
I think it's hard to say, sorry, I spoke out of turn.
That's all right.
It's hard to say one size fits all for every lot in the whole CBD.
Commissioner Huggins?
So I've never had the experience of doing large scale development. I've only done small things for myself, and I was trained as an architect, and in all of the things that I've done, I've always overbuilt them. I've always had people telling me that, oh my God, that's a waste of money. Why are you wasting your time doing that? Or why are you spending the money to do that? And interestingly enough, in the 30 years I've been doing it, I've never regretted the decision to do the thing I did. The example I give is a little house I own over on Haines Street, and I built it super insulated. It's not net zero, it's almost net zero. Canadian stagger stud design for the walls and everything. And it has, you know, like R50 in the ceilings and all this. So anyway, I don't want to get off in the weeds too much, but the point that I'm making is that when I was doing it, people were shaking their heads saying, why would you do such a thing like that? I'm just at code with that building now, 20 years later. I get a thing from Puget Power every year that says, you know, you're doing better than 97% of your neighbors at conserving energy on your thing. You know, would you like some information on how to do better? And so the point I'm making is that, you know, I think it's a point of view. I understand that developers have to go out and borrow money from banks, and I financed my own. But I think that a lot of it's just a mindset of development that you just got to get it as cheap as possible. And maybe I'm wrong there, but I'm just saying that from my experience, I've never regretted any extra money that I've put into anything I've ever done. My rate of return might have been a little slower than somebody else's, but that as a designer, as an architect, that wasn't as important to me as what you get out of it, you know, what your clients and stuff get out of it. So anyway, I'll shut up about that, but I just think a lot of it is just developer mindset. Tell me if I'm wrong.
Thank you, Pat. Any other comments? Yes, Commissioner Huggins.
Yeah. Sorry. So, in order to be positive and actually, and not just bring up more issues, I read through what John put in the thing, and I really didn't have a problem with what he said. It protects the downtown people that are within the blue line to continue to do that. There is no place to put parking for businesses there, and I think that should be protected at least for now. We can always change it later. As for new commercial. Same thing within that blue line, but for residential, I think if you're going to build residential, you've got to provide some parking. That's just my take on what it did. But I think John did a pretty good job of wording what he wrote for us.
Except for that omission there, I forgot to delete a line. You know, what might be an interesting, you guys really got me thinking about, you know, how would this play out on some of the typical lots downtown? So would it be helpful if we had Catherine do an analysis where she looks at picks a couple of vacant lots in the downtown area, some in the blue, some out of the blue. The outside of the blue line or within the blue line, and do what the max potential would be. So, 50% commercial, 50% of the lot coverage on the first floor as commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll do a couple of scenarios, one retail, one restaurant, and then make an assumption of four floors total instead of going to a max five floors. So that would be three floors of residential above, and make some assumptions about apartment size, a couple of studios, a couple of one and two bedrooms in there, and just see what could possibly be put into a lot, or the max number of residential and commercial, and see what that would require for parking, and then do some realistic calculations of if you're required to have 15 parking spaces and your lot is X feet by Y feet, how much of that footprint would that parking take? And that'll probably show us that we're not going to be able to provide all of the, one parking space per unit and commercial parking without having some sort of underground parking or a parking district. And that'll just be good information for us to have. There's no urgency on this right now, so it's not like we need to make a decision. So would that be helpful to have some additional information?
Very much so, in my opinion, yes.
Yes. Did you get all that, Catherine?
I saw Catherine's eyes roll back in her head while you were telling her.
No.
She looks very enthused about it.
Well, I like that idea. Would you mean, John, just kind of designing rough potential housing or buildings with residential, similar to what I did with the sub area plan, but with less detail, just to see how the parking fit?
Is that coming from somebody on the phone or is that in my house?
That's me. Sorry, we're cooking dinner. Hold on.
Good thing it wasn't a smoke alarm.
Right.
I thought it was inside my place.
No, the dinner's ready.
Hey, Catherine, there's a property, and John might agree, on the corner of Warner and Wally. Okay, it's got the alley where the blue line goes. So I would say that, because that could be a residential as well. It's outside of the blue line, but it's right on it. Mm-hmm. And it's a decent sized lot. That might be a good place to start.
Warner and what?
Warner and Wally. Right across from Woods Logging.
On which corner? The northeast or on the...
It would be the
northeast or southeast?
Southeast.
Southeast or northeast?
No, it would be the southwest, right? Water and Wally.
Right. You're talking about the vacant lot that has grass?
Yeah.
Where they throw the axes?
Yeah, the high school.
Yeah.
Logger rodeo
it's
team
a parcel. Works. It's a decent sized parcel, but that'll give us an idea.
I could start there.
That's southeast.
That's southeast?
But not in the blue.
I'm looking at the alley. It's northeast.
Yeah, northeast.
Northeast corner of Warner and Wally.
Yeah.
And then the old, the building that burned down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give her some others.
I just wonder because... it's going to depend, in these scenarios, am I going to say, here's what it would look like for parking to just be on the lot itself and the square footage it will take up in that regard? Or am I going to do some scenarios where the developer does underground parking or first level parking?
We'll just figure out what can go on that lot.
Okay.
Surface.
How much commercial and how much residential, and then we'll determine from that how much parking you would need.
Mm-hmm.
And then okay. We can do some, if it wasn't underground parking, what would it look like if you're trying to provide 15 parking spaces on a 100 by 200 square foot lot.
Okay. I can tell you right now from-
Show how much of a footprint it takes.
Yeah, the sub-area plan thing I did with maxing out the units, it takes a considerable amount of space to do the parking on the lot. But that sounds fun. I'll look into that.
Did you burn dinner?
Nope. it's ready. Smells good.
Well, if that were adjourned.
Yeah, so aside from staff putting that together, is there anything else that we'd like us to address? Obviously, I'll correct the attachment one. And is there anything else that we can do for you before we bring this back to you probably the next meeting?
I have a scenario question.
Yes, Prenet.
Let's say that parking is a requirement and a guy can't figure out how to put it on a particular piece of property that he wants to develop. And he talks somebody into selling the building next door, which is a historical building, and he decides to demolish it so he could put up parking. Would that be a good thing?
I think he would have a bunch of people in downtown Woolley up in arms.
But he'd say, yeah, but it's what I have to do in order to put this building here. I have to provide parking, so I got to tear this nice building down.
I don't think we have historical preservation ordinances in place in that zone, though. I mean, I'm not even going to open that can of worms myself.
No, there's no historical protection zone.
Our guidelines, design guidelines, do say that it has to be sympathetic to the 1920s era look and feel. So. For example, the example you're giving is the building that burned down. If they tore down the two next to it, it'd be the 1950 buildings or 1960 building that doesn't fit in with the rest of the town. But I believe they have to make it at least be sympathetic, like the Skagit Surveyor building across the street is. That was a new building, but they tried to make it sympathetic to the design standards.
So the building would be sympathetic. However, you can take down the building that you're purchasing for the parking, right?
Well, our design standards wouldn't really apply to a parking lot, so, and there is no historical protection. So if somebody wanted to tear down a building and put up parking, that would be something that would be allowed. Financially unlikely, but.
Well, we're just trying to think of scenarios that could pop up. We could shoot ourselves in the foot if we don't think of, you know, things that may happen.
That's true. Any other comments? Anything else that the Planning Commission wants either Catherine or John to bring back for us next month beyond what we've talked about? All right. I guess you guys have your marching orders.
Are we expecting to see these kind of drawings of the lots with the parking next Planning Commission, or is that something we're just thinking about?
I don't think we need drawings, just the capacities of the coverage and would it accommodate the spots. I mean, if you could
just kind of a square footage calculation.
I would be fine with that, right? I mean, this is what you can put on it, and this is what the number of units are, and this is what it could. I mean, I'd say if you want to sketch it out, I mean, that's fine. We're just trying to figure out, okay, how does this code look? Right on what we're seeing in reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think you got the resources to start sketching out buildings and site plans.
I'm not asking for that myself.
Okay. Commissioner Freiberger.
So out of curiosity, the rezone requests that were brought up last time and just presented to us for information, that will be revisited at a future planning commission meeting now that we can actually act on.
I was anticipating those rezones to be at the next planning commission meeting, which would be July. Okay.
So we shouldn't expect the CBD parking requirements till maybe August then? Give Catherine a little bit of time, or do you want to group those together?
If I'm just doing calculations, it won't take me very long.
Okay. All right. If there's nothing else, no other comments or questions regarding this, we have no new business. And is there, just kind of revisiting the Planning Commission discussion, is there anything that anybody wants to add for the good of the order or wants to talk about? Everybody want to get back outside and be done? All right. Well, that being the case, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Come on, people. I do it all the time. Motion to adjourn.
I'll second that.
All right. So we have moved by Commissioner Patizzi, seconded by Commissioner Penno to adjourn. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We are adjourned at 7:38 p.m.
Good to see everybody.
Thank you, everybody. See you guys.